It's the Lauren and Fritz podcast. We're back. What number is this?
This is somewhere in the, are we 30s, right? Somewhere in the 30s? Not quite 40.
39, somewhere. I want to say. Something like that. It's been a while. Lots going on. Lots going on in both of our lives.
My life is crazy. I changed jobs, basically. I'm now a mobile phone salesman.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, it's so not that exciting.
No.
I mean, I don't know. Cell phone. See, and you know what? Big in my life, too, I now have a Droid phone. So I have finally one of them newfangled smartphones.
Welcome to 2011.
I know. And you know what? I was thinking, my big thing about having this is like, well, you know what? I'm going to be connected all the time. I got my email, got my Facebook, I got everything, you know, all right here on my little thing. And I'm like, you know, I'll keep in touch with people more. No. I don't check the email on it ever. And Facebook, I have the app on there and I couldn't be bothered because everyone's status update is the same stupid shit.
You know, I don't want to say mean things about Facebook since I will post this on Facebook later and everyone will read it. But sometimes the status is, I don't check it nearly as much as I check Twitter. Twitter's where the action is.
See now I got to get the Twitter app and create a Twitter account and really get myself into 2011.
But
even then, I still don't even want to leave like a status update. Like, I don't want people to know what I'm doing. I don't care. I just need better friends, I think. I think you should be my only face because you do have worthy Facebook posts. Twitter, I don't know. I know your Vox blogs is
Twitter,
great.
Twitter, I mean, we've talked about it before on the podcast. Love it. I have long conversation with friends, with people who are critics online. Sometimes they'll respond back to me when they say, like, oh, this movie was great. And I'll be like, I didn't think it was that great. Sometimes they will respond back and say, why? Or shut up. And that's exciting. They're reaching out. While Facebook is more, you know, if you love puppies, repost this. I bet you don't have the guts to repost this. And I'm like, of course I love puppies. I have one. I don't got to repost this thing to prove that I like them.
I just got to say, I don't get the Farmville either. Stop sending me requests for Farmville. I don't give a shit.
Well, you can block all that stuff.
That's you?
Yeah. I block all Farmville, all Mafia Wars. I've forgot about Mafia Wars until this conversation right now because I blocked everything, so I don't get any of that stuff.
That's where I want my life to be. I want to forget about Farmville and, you know, everything like that because I don't understand. Like, I have free time on my hands in which I use to play Call of Duty. So I guess maybe that's where my free time goes. But mm-hmm. I guess other those who aren't into Call of Duty, but you're not into Call of Duty.
No.
And yet somehow you don't fall into the pitfalls of the Farmville or Mafia Wars.
I don't play a lot of video games. The last video game I played was Def Jam Rap Star, in which it's just a karaoke game. And I don't really play a lot of video games. Though this does remind me, before we dive into our topic list, that McCarty requested that we talk about, even briefly, the release today of Portal 2 and Mortal Kombat.
Well, Mortal Kombat, first of all, I have a PlayStation 3, so I did play Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
And you know what? A brief history about this is I started running emulators on my computers because I didn't feel like hooking up my old systems. Yes, I do it legitly. I only download the ROMs that I actually have the games for. You know, and so hooked up some Game Genie, and I was playing some Mortal Kombat 3, Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 on Super Nintendo. And
the best.
You know, yeah, it was a lot of fun. One button fatalities because I don't want to remember that shit. So, so I went through, played the game, beat it, and I was like, yeah, dude, Mortal Kombat. I miss this game. You know, it's a decent game, and I played the new Mortal Kombat. And I gotta say, to its benefit, it's not the 3D style anymore. It looks fantastic. It plays just like Mortal Kombat. Oh. But I have the same problems as I do with Street Fighter 4. Is that I play Street Fighter, and I don't know what I did. But I must have just played the hell out of it as a kid because it just doesn't grab me. And then the online play, playing against other people, that's kind of fun too. But everyone else is kind of better than me. So I don't have a good time playing online because I just get my ass kicked. So Mortal Kombat, I have played the new one. Well, I played the demo of it. I'm not going to go buy it, but it's Mortal Kombat. If you love Mortal Kombat, they really did a good job reviving it, just like they did with Street Fighter IV. So it's along the same lines where it's not going to blow you away, but at the same time, if you love button mashers, it would be better if like you and I were playing together against
each other. Oh, yeah, because I'm terrible at it now, I'm sure. The only guy I was good with back in the day was Sub-Zero.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Scorpion with the, you know, get over here. And then
no, I was good at freezing people and punching them. That was my move. I'd freeze you and I'd uppercut you, and hopefully you wouldn't remember any moves long enough to beat me.
Now, Portal 2, well, what can you say? I haven't played Portal 2, but I can guarantee you the game's fantastic. Okay. The game's just going to be phenomenally good. Portal 2, I mean, the original Portal is so underrated, I think, in my opinion, because anyone can play it. It's a puzzle game, but it's set up like a first-person shooter. But the puzzles in it are so clever. The new one's going to be even more clever. I know, but whatever. You know what I mean.
Clever.
You got multiplayer being added onto it as well, which I'm really curious to see how that works out. You know, and the fact too is that Steam's linking to PlayStation 3 now, so you can have Steam people playing against PlayStation 3 people. Steam, by the way, being the that's how you play on the computer. That's like
okay.
Because
for a second there, I had no idea what we were talking about. I thought you were talking about literal people made of Steam.
No, which Steam is
like a Mortal Kombat thing.
Steam is an organization where basically, you know, you got your Xbox, you got your Wii, you got your PlayStation. Well, for PC gamers, where you go, where everything's organized, you play against people and buy games is on Steam.
Okay.
So think of Steam as like your computer becoming a system. But they're making it so that basically people on the computer can play against people on the PlayStation 3.
Ah.
Well, not against, but I don't know. But that's coming, so that's going to be awesome. Portal's fantastic. So, I mean, you just go get it and play it. I am gonna buy Portal 2. So,
okay, two rousing endorsements for Portal 2 and Mortal Kombat. Okay.
Well, Mortal Kombat again. If you're bored with fighters like I am, it's not gonna cure the itch because it literally is Mortal Kombat. I mean, it's. It's just the equivalent of Street Fighter IV, which I really didn't get into that much. So,
okay, fair enough.
So there's our video games, which I did kind of want to, since I'm such a gamer. You know, I play games all the time. I figured that would be worth mentioning. Oh, and SOCOM 4 came out. Sucks big dick.
Oh, wow.
SOCOM 4 is terrible. Trust me, I tried. I really tried with SOCOM 4. I got the beta because I got Killzone 3. Got the beta for that, and I tried for hours to get into that game, and it was just terrible. It's just stay away from that one. It's just the hit detection is terrible. You're always playing against clans who are going to whoop your ass to defend the objectives. It's just complicated. You have so many people on each team, and you all need to be organized, but it's hard to be organized when no one's organizing with each other. And it's just a big chaotic mess, and just, you really have to be a diehard SOCOM player. And if you are, then you have enough friends to fill up a team, and you are organizing, and you're just demolishing everyone. So unless you already have a clan, and you're already into the SOCOM thing, and I'm friends with a couple of SOCOM people who are nuts over SOCOM, and they do. They have conferences, they do all the, it's the nerdiest of the nerd.
Wow.
So unless you have a clan together, stay away from SOCOM. That game is terrible.
Okay. I will steer clear of anything SOCOM related. Okay.
All right. So on to what the core of the Lorne and Fritz podcast is about, movies and music.
You saw
a ton of movies. Me, my busy schedule, my
you
wife.
You have not seen anything.
No, and Amber's down in North Carolina working on a movie. She just left. We got the word last week. She's gone for 6 weeks. I started the new job and school. So, and we were planning on going and seeing Hannah. We really wanted to go check that out. I wanted to see Sucker Punch really bad, too. But just unfortunately didn't have the time to actually make it to the theater. So,
okay. Can we talk about or at least mention what movie Amber is working on?
It is, well, geez, I don't know. Well, she would tell everyone it's the sequel to Piranha. It's called Piranha 3 Double D.
All right.
So I'm not gonna give away too much, but there's the big bombshell. Lauren and Fritz podcast. You hear it here first. They are making a sequel to Piranha, And by the sounds of it, it's going to be in 3D.
Okay. All right. All right. So something to look forward to. Not really. probably 18 months, I'm sure. I don't know what the turnaround is on these type of things. All right. So movies that I saw that you wanted to see. So we'll start with Hannah.
Okay.
Hannah.
Which was getting amazing reviews on the old Rotten Tomatoes there.
Rotten Tomatoes. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good.
It seemed to be, it looked like the opening seed of Batman Begins, or the opening section of Batman Begins, with replacing Bruce Wayne with a little girl.
No.
I don't know. Just the training on the frozen lake. I don't know. The previews. I'm just sitting there going, wait, didn't I see this in Batman Begins?
The way the movie really plays, just like in Kick-Ass with Hit Girl and Big Daddy, except mm-hmm. it's just them. You don't have the unimportant Kick-Ass character. Except instead of playing the Hit Girl character for laughs and making her ridiculous and making her this killer who says cunt and shoots people in the face, you have Hannah, who's been trained since birth to be a killing machine, but it's kind of sad, because it is kind of sad, because she doesn't have a childhood. She never
jumped rope, never, no hopscotch.
No hopscotch.
Childhood, no, just robbed, no red guy, become a red killing light, machine. Green
light. Yeah, so She spends a lot of the movie running, and
can we stop right there? I would trade in my childhood to become a killing machine, by the way.
See, that's what you think, because the beginning of the movie, you're like, this chick knows it all. She's got all these skills with the Z. She's got it all figured out. And then as the movie goes along, you're like, she meets an actual regular normal girl, and you're like, oh, this is kind of sad. She's really missed out on like a life. And as the movie goes on, she's forced to, you know, she places these people in danger and has to use her abilities to, you know, fight off these villains. And you realize, like, it's really cool, but it's not, like, in the long run, her life is ruined. She can't be a normal person. And
She kills everyone, just go back to being a normal person.
Well, maybe. I mean, the end of the movie I found to be kind of chilling and nihilistic. It gives you, in one way, a sort of pat resolution. Like, okay, everything's lined up, that's how the movie ends. But if you think about it and how it correlates to the beginning of the movie and what her character's gone through, it's rather sad. And I respect her for that. It kind of followed through on that. So I thought it was really good. I think it works on a couple layers. It's not just an action movie. Some incredible one-take action scenes. Eric Bana whooping some ass. It's real good. Real good.
Yeah, I like it. You know, that's good depth to a movie. I mean, yeah. So that's what
we're all about, depth.
Yeah, we like to dive deep. You know, get in there, hands dirty, and yeah. So Hannah is definitely going to be what is that? Our rating system yet again is in constant.
I believe our rating system is yup or nope.
Yeah, and we're getting a yep on Hannah.
Big old yup on Hannah.
Which I'm pleased to hear it has a lot more depth on it, because it looked like it was just a well-done action flick. So I'm real happy to hear that it's got a little bit more to it.
Absolutely.
Now, something that I doubt has some depth to it, I'm going to guess, is Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch is a movie where Zack Snyder went on record saying, I'm going to make a movie about all the things that nerd culture is obsessed with. And I'm going to twist it on its head and make you really think about things, about the objectification of women and the use of violence and all these things. And I'm going to make it real girl power. And Zack Snyder is not smart enough to do that. So what you end up getting is Zack Snyder's attempt at a girl power movie, but he makes one huge fatal flaw. And you know what that is?
Hmm.
He set his girl power movie in a brothel. So
I thought it was a crazy house.
Well, you've got multiple realities there.
Okay, so when she seeks into the underworld, it's a whorehouse.
It's all essentially from these female point of views, but you have the girl being forced against her will into a crazy house, as you say.
That's hot.
And then in her fantasy, she's in a brothel slash burlesque house.
This is getting hotter.
And then the fantasy on top of that is that she's in these sort of, I don't know, war-torn worlds fighting giant stone creatures and dragons and stuff.
Yeah, just went limp on that one.
There you go. So you've got these multiple levels of reality, just like, I'd say, like Inception. But none of it really corresponds to what I would imagine a real teenage girl would ever imagine or fantasize about. And the whorehouse part is really, it undercuts the whole movie. There's a scene where Jenna Malone's character is leading around Emily Browning's character, who's the main character, and her name is Baby Doll, and Jenna Malone's character's name is Rocket, and they all have these ridiculous names. And she, like, takes her into this room, and it's got this, like, rotating bed, and she sits down in the bed, and she's like, this is where it happens. She's like, what happens? It's like, this is where you entertain the men. And I'm like, really? Do we need this prostitute angle? And I've talked with people who've said that they're slightly interested. A lot of girls I work with and women I work with. And they said that the whole prostitute angle completely turned them off from ever seeing the movie. Like, there's like, I don't need to see anything about prostitutes. I don't want anything to even be involved in any sort of story that has to deal with that. That just... They don't want anything to do with it. It's like, why even see anything about that?
So, well, is she happy that she's a whore?
No. She's okay. Very unhappy about it.
So the whole then thing there's your angle right there. She's not, you know, happy that she's having sex for money.
Well, the thing is that then the movie doesn't even really follow that line of showing anyone being a prostitute or anything like that. The movie keeps pulling away when it should either go whole hog with that prostitute angle, what have you. It keeps pulling back. I don't know, because it was trying to get the PG-13 rating or something. The only areas that the movie really excels is that the action sequences are incredible. They're amazing.
Now, seeing the preview, this is all I kind of wanted from the movie was A, the visuals looked fantastic. I just wanted to see maybe a little bit of story of this girl trying to get out of a crazy house while Panic Switch is just rocking throughout the whole movie while dragons and shit are flying and she's beating up stuff. Like, that's kind of the reason why I wanted to see that movie, was it just kind of looked like a stupid movie with a bunch of really good effects and some action scenes to it.
I thought the effects were top notch.
I mean, the visual style looks amazing.
It was seamless, quite frankly. And the thing is that there's been some argument that all the action sequences, because they take place in this third fantasy world, really have no stakes or an impact on what's going on in the second fantasy world. And I don't really follow that, because there's, I would say, just a step above bare minimum level character development going on. And the acting is better than I expected from the people that it had to be better from. So Jenna Malone's pretty good, what have you. So, although, what's her name from the High School Musical? Vanessa Hudgens.
Oh, yeah.
Not very good actress. No. Not very good.
Wow, I'm surprised.
I'm sorry to blow your mind on that.
Not really.
but the action sequences are incredible.
So if you take the story out of it, you know what I mean? If you go in and really don't give a shit about the story, you're just going in there to watch this, you know, kick-ass flick.
Oh, yeah. How does that fare? It delivers. Okay. I enjoyed it for the most part. I kept having to sort of like, you know, say, oh, that doesn't really fit, or it's too bad they didn't develop that better, or this doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And there's also I'd read initially, and there's a tease of it over the end credits, that it was going to be a lot like Moulin Rouge and have a lot of song and dance numbers. And at the last minute, they cut them all out. So
good, because song and dance numbers is the same as women and prostitution to me. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like,
would have kept you out of it.
You said musicals in there, I would have completely counted the movie out.
Okay. See, for me, I think that might flesh it out a little better. So I guess the director's cut will have all that stuff inserted back in. But the action scenes, as I've said already multiple times, are fantastic. There's a train sequence that is Hall of Fame shit. It is... they do a siege on this train. It's all shot as if it's one seamless one take. The camera's spinning around. They're blowing away robots. It was awesome. It is awesome.
So if you want depth, you're going to go see Hannah. If you don't really care about the story, go see Sucker Punch.
Yes. When I was watching Hannah, I was like, oh, man, this is what would happen if you have an action movie with more thought put into it. Fair enough. Because I read some interviews with Zack Snyder, and it's like you read it, and you're like, dude, I wish you were smarter. I wish you would say things that would make it seem like we misunderstand your movie, or there was something you were going for. Because they're like, is this movie a female empowerment movie? And Zack Snyder's like, I guess it could be, or not. Whatevs. Girls
Whoa,
are
did
cool.
I just blow your mind? Is it or isn't it?
You never know, man. I directed Watchmen. So I would say if you are inclined to hate a movie like Sucker Punch, you will hate a movie like Sucker
Which,
Punch.
You know what? Because another reason why I was excited about it is love Watchmen. Again, the visual effects in Watchmen, amazing. Story in Watchmen, absolutely love it. But I find whenever like I'll catch Watchmen on cable or something like that, and I'll find I don't watch it because the story is so involving that it's like, well, you got to start from the beginning and you got to sit your ass down for like 3 hours. So it's a big commitment to watch Watchmen. So I was like, you know, couldn't I? Is there a movie out there, you know, that's going to have that visual effect style that I really love, but then I don't really have to give a shit about anything else? And that sounds sort of like Sucker Punch.
Yes.
That's what I wanted from it. I'm excited.
Yeah. All right. So I give Sucker Punch a yup, but fully aware that it may be a nope for some of our listeners. There you go. To each their own. I'm nice like that. All right. So we'll talk about one more.
All right.
We'll talk about Your Highness, which was the new Danny McBride movie, David Gordon Green's follow-up to Pineapple Express, which, refresh my memory, you did not like Pineapple Express?
No. Okay. No, maybe it's the stoner in me, you know, used to, you know, back in the day, don't anymore, but used to, you know, toke up quite a bit, and... Yeah. I thought jokes in Pineapple Express were lame. The story was lame. They tried to throw at. Yeah, I was very underwhelmed by Pineapple Express. And Your Highness seems to me to be, you know, who's the lead character again?
Danny McBride.
Yeah, Danny McBride. Danny McBride is. Oh, I want to find him very funny, but at the same time, whenever I see something with Danny McBride in it, he'll make me chuckle, but then he loses his charm for me really quickly. Like every movie I've seen with Danny McBride, or even that TV show where he was the baseball coach, Eastbound and Down. I felt like he kind of, again, just I'm like, oh wow, okay, he's funny, and then he just loses his charm for me really damn quick.
I think that's intentional on Eastbound and Down because he's an asshole on that show and. He's funny, but he's still an asshole, and he's an unrepentant asshole, which I love Eastbound and Down. I've watched the first season of that many times, because what people over and they'll say they haven't seen it will make them watch like the whole thing. I love Eastbound and Down. So keep it in mind what you're saying. Your Highness is, in a way, much sloppier than Pineapple Express.
Mm-hmm.
Much
I can
more
see that.
Slack. But At the same time, it works as a fantasy film. It has really good effects. All the action in it is really well done. There's a scene where they have to fight this snake monster. And what they do with the snake monster and how they even introduce it is very visually interesting. And as somebody pointed out, much more interesting than anything they did in, like, Clash of the Titans or anything like that.
Hmm.
Funny, yes. I wasn't dying, like, when I saw Pineapple Express, but it's pretty funny. Rachel loved it. Like, Rachel was, like, dying the whole
Really?
Time. Oh, she was dying.
I had really low expectations for this movie.
Justin Theroux is the villain in it, and he steals the whole movie. He's every scene he has is unbelievably hilarious. He's got a great line, like, every time he shows up. And there's an – I mean, honestly, I cannot hate a movie that has – the buildup to the climax is that they have to stop an event called the Fuckinine. So, yeah. There's just – it's very – just a lot of the movie is ridiculous things happened or something happens and Danny McBride is like, this is ridiculous. What is going on? Well, everyone else is super serious about – being in medieval times and fighting wizards and stuff, and he's just kind of rolling.
A big thing I got from it is it kind of looked like a modern day. I mean, not an interpretation, but sort of a modern day Robin Hood Men in Tights. Like, I mean, the gag with the chastity belt and.
I've heard that comparison. I can tell you that I can't bear to sit through Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Watched it the other day on Netflix.
Okay, so.
So stupid.
I can't even do that. It doesn't have any joke songs, if that's what you mean.
No, I wasn't referring to joke songs, just sort of, you know, the jokes about medieval times.
Not a ton of stuff like that. More just, I don't know, there's a molestation joke. There's a couple good gags about being locked up and not understanding civilization and then encountering it. I don't know. There's a scene where a guy gets his scalp ripped off. Yeah. Oh, we got Angry Dog.
Angry Dog.
Oh. Anyway, so.
So we get a yep for Your Highness?
Absolutely.
If you like Pineapple Express, I'm gonna avoid this movie because I do not like Pineapple Express, and Danny McBride isn't one of my favorite comedians. So.
That's it for movies. We'll now move on.
Local H
music. So you have seen Local H live, sir?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I did not see them in a capacity that would have been ideal. It was the 12 Angry Months tour, and they were opening up for another band. So, I've heard the best way to see Local H is when they are the headliners. So I did see them with time constraints. Didn't get a lot of it, but still, I mean, it's Local H, so couldn't go wrong there. But yeah.
Yeah, so I got to see them this past weekend. They were touring they're touring, actually. This is the singles tour. They actually are touring behind that singles album that just came out that collects all their singles when they were on Island. Mm-hmm. So that's only the first three albums.
Which is a lot of good stuff to choose from.
Oh, yeah. So they came out, and it was pretty full, which was excellent. I was excited just that there were so many people there. And they basically played every single awesome song, which was pretty much all their singles. But they played singles from every album, not just the ones for Island.
Oh, so they did do PJ Souls and 12 Angry Months and stuff? Okay.
Oh, yeah. But they opened with Fritz's Corner, which is what a way to open.
Oh, yeah.
Right off the bat, I go into full-on Local H geek out mode. I'm like, oh, my God, they're opening Fritz's Corner. And then they go from there, they lead into All the Kids Are All Right, and it was just, from then on, they just rocked it. Some guy at one point yelled out Cooler Heads, and he said, we're only playing the singles tonight, man. And then that guy yelled something back to the effect of, well, they dropped you, and they said, yeah, but they owe me. And yeah, they played 24-hour breakup session. They played Michelle. They played a new song from the new album that they're working on right now called Another February. All I can tell you about it is that Local H continues to be awesome. Because by halfway through it, I was like, I love this song. This is an amazing song. I can't wait to own it and play it all the time.
I mean, Local H is so simple, it's kind of hard to get it wrong. But at the same time, if someone else tried to do it, I mean, they've been doing it for so long that if anyone else tried to copy it, it just wouldn't be the same. You know what I mean? You'd overcomplicate it. The only thing that came close, I think, is Death From Above. And that's just because of the two-man thing. But we all know how that ended.
Well,
with an appearance at Coachella.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. But Local H Live, yeah, they rocked it straight through. I think they played like an hour and change. And then they just said, all right, now it's the encore. And they played a bunch of stuff from their mixtape album. And then they played Bound for the Floor. And then they closed with their cover of Wolf Like Me.
Hmm.
So, and then right after that, Scott Lucas went right off the stage, right into the crowd, high-fiving everybody, went right to the merch table, and just started selling merch.
That's why I love Local H.
So
man.
Then we went right to the merch table. I brought my buddy Cole, who goes to medical school with Rachel, and he had never actually heard of Local H before. But I sold him on coming with me to the show. I said, "Do you love 90s rock?" And he says, "I love 90s rock." He's like,
and you've never heard of Local H? Come on. I'm not surprised that they haven't heard of it. Local H, I get that all the time.
Now, he had heard some of the songs. Like, he recognized some of the songs.
Well, who hasn't heard Bound for the Floor?
Yeah, he knew that one, yeah. So the show ends. I turn to him. I go, what'd you think of that? He's like, I am now a fan. He's like, I got to get a shirt. So we go over to the merch table, and there's Scott Lucas just, you know, selling stuff and being awesome. And so we both got
shirts.
That's
why I saw him at the wrong time, man. When they headline it, they kill it. They kill it.
And I went up. I got a shirt. I bought – I actually bought his solo record that he did, Scott Lucas and the Married Men. I bought that, and I said – I'll take the shirt and that album. And he goes, the shirt, wise choice. This album, not a wise choice. I was like, okay. I said, it's the only thing by you I don't own. And he said, there's a reason for that. But it was totally in good fun. And then and after I bought it, I said, I just want to let you know, Here Comes the Zoo is like the greatest album ever. And he goes, really? Thanks. So, yeah, it was a wonderful experience all around. They played everything. The drummer, Brian St. Clair, that dude is... Oh my God, he's a beast.
I want to know what the first drummer's doing, though. That's what I. What is he doing?
I looked up his Wikipedia, actually, and he's been involved in a couple other bands since then. He's got a family. So, he's doing stuff.
I don't. I still. The new drummer is an obvious choice if you didn't have the first drummer. Sorry, I don't know the names, but I still. I know we've talked about it here on the podcast before, but definitely when they switch to drummers, he's definitely a lot more simplified. Whereas the first drummer, he hit. You know, he's one of the hardest hitting drummers. I think he's harder hitting than Dave Grohl even. But he still had a little bit of finesse to it. The new guy is just a little more animal, just really straightforward. But
that's true.
Little nitpicks.
I have no problem.
If I couldn't have the original, second guy's a good backup choice. But I still, first couple of albums, I like the drums, I think, a little bit better. But
Here Comes the Zoo is so important to me. And the sound of that record is so incredible. At the same time, I mean, that record is often tied in my brain with Peck of the Cats. So, So Local H Live, they're currently touring. If they play near you, you should go.
Now I'm gonna quote you right here because I didn't know how to interpret this quote, and I was waiting to ask you until the podcast. But Death From Above 1979 got back together for the money, played at Coachella, set was murder.
It was murder. It was insane.
And I believe that is you enjoying it. They were killing it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't even think I'd get to see it, and then it turned out they were airing on YouTube all the sets. Mm-hmm. So I sat down on my computer and just waited for him to play and hooked up to my stereo. So I wasn't listening through laptop speakers, And it was incredible. They sounded just as good as the last two times I saw them live.
They surprised they didn't phone it in. I'm surprised there wasn't. You know, I'm really shocked that they pulled it together because he specifically said we're getting back together for the money.
Yeah, but there's I mean, they were smiling at each other. They were having a good time. The riffs were hot. Jesse's still cool as shit. And Sebastian is still an asshole, and that's the dichotomy they have, and it works. I mean, Sebastian Granger is definitely somebody at this point where anything he says just drips with sort of like he's very condescending.
Yeah.
In even like a slight way, because
he served it up best with "he's an asshole."
Yeah, he had a good bit. I mean, it was nothing really, but at the end of their set, they said, "Stick around for Duran Duran," and it was like, "What a diss!" Like, "What a diss!" Just and all that's all he said was, "Stick around for Duran Duran." And I was like, "Oh, what an asshole!" And then the camera actually cut to them walking off stage, and you can see Jesse was laughing, probably thinking, "Ah, Sebastian's such a dick." But that's how they work. Now, they didn't play anything new. There's no new songs. They played
as would be expected,
from the album.
But still, for a reunion show like that, that's kind of almost the way you want it. But yeah, it doesn't give any hopes for a new album.
I have to say, we were watching it, and Rachel was watching them and their interplay, and she said, "You know, maybe they will do another album. They looked a little comfortable."
It would be a situation, I bet you any money, where they would maybe try. But when you have that much animosity between the two people, you know what I mean? Well, maybe not even animosity, but they obviously don't work well together. You know what I mean? Like, it was obviously, that's what my assumption was, is why they broke up, was because, you know, they just did not get along in the songwriting process. Why go through this? Why try it again? I mean, they may attempt to do it, but I'm not expecting anything new. And to leave us with what you already left us, which is, you know...
Perfect.
Well, except for the remix album, which
right,
you for some reason enjoy, but
I have to be honest, it's not the worst thing I've ever heard.
It's close to it for me.
I know, I know a lot of people hate it, but there's a couple on there that I really enjoy. I mean, it's not perfect. I mean, they could have remixed the whole album, and instead they remixed certain songs like four times, which doesn't make any sense. But
you know what I did with that? Because my buddy had it, and he had a remix album, and he actually had the remix album, and he left a burned copy of it in my car, and it somehow made it into my rotation, but all the CD said was Death From Above 1979. Didn't say what album it was, and I ended up ripping it into my computer and ended up on an MP3 player. I ended up deleting all the MP3s off of my computer from it, and I specifically put it in my case of CDs I don't listen to.
There you go.
So that, yeah. Oh, I just don't like it. Anyways.
Okay. Anyway.
So we got a couple of albums out.
Couple albums. Let's start New Foo Fighters, Wasting Light. First new record in 4 years.
I wanted so badly to hate this because a couple of reasons.
Okay.
Didn't like the last couple of Foo Fighters records.
Okay.
Color and the Shape, for me, I don't know what it is, but I just end up skipping over it every single time. First album, still classic. Still love the first album. And then we have the one with Learn to Fly on it.
There's Nothing Left to Lose.
Nothing Left to Lose. That one for me, again, has gotten a little stale for me. It's still good. Still good. But for some reason, I still kind of skip over it a little bit. Then after that, I kind of lost them one by one. It just kind of doesn't do anything for me. And then I've been hearing stuff where you know, Foo Fighters obviously have such a big following, and even times like these, I hate that song. I've heard quotes where they said that Dave Grohl is one of the best songwriters of our generation.
I don't agree with that.
And that's the thing, is I wanted to listen to this album and go, you know what, Dave Grohl isn't that good of a songwriter. And I even heard a lot of people saying, you know, questioning how much influence he actually had on Nirvana, where they were saying, well, Dave Grohl, especially In Utero, influenced a lot, which is not true, because Kurt Cobain, it's just Kurt Cobain did most of In Utero, you know what I mean? So, but I gotta say, the album's fucking good.
It's a good album. It's their best album in a long... my two favorite Foo Fighters records are There's Nothing Left to Lose and the self-titled.
Yeah. I would probably put it up there.
I mean, honestly, the first three records are all pretty classic. Color in the Shape.
It's overplayed is what it is. Monkey
that's
Wrench.
It. Yeah, and also, that's the one that sometimes I listen to it and it's like really predictable, like really quiet, really loud, really quiet, really loud, repeat. And I feel like that's where...
Yeah, that this is a blackout song where it's like, yeah. Yes, well, that exactly. was, you know, that was what was going on at the time.
That's what
Dynamics.
Was going on, exactly. I like the self-titled just because those songs are just classic embedded tracks from my childhood. And There's Nothing Left to Lose. He was kind of invoking sort of like a singer-songwriter thing there. But also, which is not something I normally like. I don't like singer-songwriter any bullshit. But it really worked on There's Nothing Left to Lose. And also, the songs on that album don't sound like, another Foo Fighters song.
They sound very interesting. Yeah, you're right.
Each one is very different. He's trying something different. He's trying a little quiet. And not so quiet that it fades into the background, which happens with a lot of slow Foo Fighters songs. Like, it's a slow song. Skip it.
I will say, though, I do have a couple of criticisms of the albums, however, of this new Foo Fighters album.
Yeah.
First of all, it's not a criticism, but it's just a comment. Dave Grohl, apparently over the last 4 years of not making a record, really wanted to scream. Dave Grohl screams so much on this album. That was a bit of a shock. It is kind of, I think the Foo Fighters, ever since One by One, have fallen into this, hey, we want to sound like nu metal. You know what I mean? Like, they have this metal.
I think it comes more from Dave Grohl wants the Foo Fighters to be a little harder than they actually are. Because really, at the end of the day, their best songs are songs that have a sort of poppy sound to them. Learn to Fly, things like that.
I mean, go back to the Mentos commercial one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is that band at their best. That is Dave Grohl at his songwriting best. And he keeps trying to write these songs that are like heavy and hard. And it never really fits for me.
Well, this album is there's not a slow track on it.
No. There isn't. There are less hooks and melodies than you would normally expect from a Foo Fighters album, though, which I think is my big criticism, is that you'll have a song that have a really cool hook or a really good chorus, and you'll get a song like White Limo that's just all riff and screaming. And it's not awful, but if they had worked a little harder and given it a really cool hook or chorus, it'd be a great song, but instead it's just a riff without anything else.
See, I still really like that. The biggest thing that I had, though, there's one track on the album. It's only 11 songs, which I thought was a really good length. I think that was a perfect length for the album. The track entitled These Days.
Yes.
Had to skip that one. I listened to 3/4 of it, then had to skip it, and I don't think I'll ever listen to that song again, and namely because Dave Grohl, you don't need to empower me. You don't need to give me these stupid Times Like These songs that lift me up and incense confidence in myself, Dave Grohl. I don't fucking need that from a Foo Fighters album. I need you to rock and give me some hooks. And it bugs the crap out of me now that Dave Grohl thinks that he's this inspirational songwriter and he's got to shoehorn that crap in there. It just really, didn't like it at all, man. And it's just, other than that, though, lyrically, besides that one song, I thought the lyrics were also well done as well. I mean, not a whole lot of hooks, as you said, but still.
Yeah, it's not as hooky, but
I still liked his song, the way he sang the songs. I still like it. I still think it's a solid album.
I think it's their best album easily since There's Nothing Left to Lose.
Oh, yeah.
Although I recently went back and listened to all the Foo Fighters albums, and what I came to find was that One by One is terrible. It has four good songs. I have to disagree. I like Times Like These. But basically, tracks 1 through 4 on One by One are pretty good. And then the album takes this incredible jump down into just mediocrity. It's like not the worst thing you've ever heard, but total middle of the road shit. And it's there's this song called like Burn Away. God, that's a pretty good song. So that's that album's not very good. And then what's that one? The best or In Your Honor.
Oh yeah.
In Your Honor is just ill conceived. It has some good songs on it, but splitting all the slow songs on one disc and all the hard songs on the other disc, it
divides the record heavy. Into you got to have one or the other, and either one of them doesn't perform at each respective level. You could have cut that into a single album, and you could have called it a day. You know what I mean? There's a lot of filler on both sides of that disc.
Yeah, and then I actually found that Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace was surprisingly good. I found that one to be a heck of a lot better than I'd remembered.
I found this album to be a lot more refined than the last one, where the last one, the Honor, whatever, that whole long thing. This one sounds like a much more focused version of that, in my opinion, The Wasting Light, where it's got a lot of the same ideas, but at the same time, I wouldn't even say ideas, but I don't know. It just seems to be a polished version, because it sounds similar, but at the same time, I just think it's more refined.
There's no dicking around on Wasting Light. It's just, here's another jam, another rocker we wrote. And the last record spent a lot of time, being quiet at the beginning and getting loud. And it repeats itself a lot. Like, you get a lot of songs that have quiet beginnings and loud endings. And I remember thinking, at any point did you think, well, I've already written a variation on this song on this very album that we're recording. Do I need to make another version of it? I mean, track one, The Pretender on Echoes, starts quiet and then gets loud. The next song is Let It Die. It follows the exact same template. So there you go. So ultimately, I really like Foo Fighters' Wasting Light.
It's a Foo Fighters album to check out, and I haven't, and I've been hesitant to check out their last couple albums. I was hesitant to check out this one, but it really is. It's a pretty solid album.
I would say definitely.
If you've been hankering for some good old Foo Fighters, which it's not good old Foo Fighters, but at the same time, it's Dave Grohl writing some damn good songs.
Did you notice this? I noticed this after a critic pointed it out. That this is their easily most Queens of the Stone Age influenced record.
I didn't really get a whole lot of Queens on it.
Songs start with that very military start-stop sound that Josh Homme lives for.
I found the drums to be a little bit more simplistic. Normally he's going nuts on the drum kit, and this one he seemed a little bit more restrained. His fills were a little bit less. But I didn't think any Queens while listening to
there's
it.
There's a couple
really,
tracks. But now that I've placed that idea in your mind, there's a couple tracks. I want to say Back and Forth. There's one track, though, that the opening guitar riff is like, and it's like sounds just like a Queens.
Back and Forth actually reminded me a lot of Nirvana, actually. I don't know what it, but it has that burner, you know, that sort of a riff to it that kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of actually some In Utero tracks, really. Like Very Ape and things like that. But I never got Queens listening to. I got Nirvana a little bit, but
when I read that, I went back. I'd been listening to the album off and on, so when I listened to it again, I said, "Yeah, I can hear it. It's not. There's no full song sounds like a Queen song, but there are like parts or riffs that, or little chunks and sections of songs that have definitely a Queen sound to it. Plus, you have to say, since they went and made a record that is all rocking front to back, that sounds like a Queen's record, right?
True that.
So."
Let's move on to our last album here. We got TV on the Radio.
9 Types of Light, their first record since Dear Science, which was what, 2008?
Yeah, you know what? I was sitting there, and it was probably a couple months ago, popped into my head, man, when's the new TV on the Radio going to come out? And then all of a sudden YouTube informs me that they have a whole album on YouTube, which they did do the, it's a whole video of the entire album, which you can check out on YouTube as well.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, it's a whole, it starts off with a bunch of people talking, and then it kind of goes in, I haven't watched the whole thing, I only fast-forwarded part that to hear what it was actually sounding like, but yeah, they have a whole hour-something video that collides with every song on the album, which is always a nice thing to have, but...
Oh, yeah.
So I haven't got a full chance to check that out yet, but yeah, I was sitting there going, yeah, it's time for some... New TV on the Radio, and look at that. We have a new TV on the Radio album.
Okay, well, what'd you think?
You know what? I felt I liked it as an overall whole. I really did like it. However, the criticisms that I have of it is that it's not as charming as their previous albums. That's the whole thing that I had, where it gave me TV on the Radio. And when I say, like, charming... Like Dear Science and then Welcome to Cookie Mountain before that, I could show it to non-TV on the Radio fans and get a couple tracks out and go, hey, check this out. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, wow, okay, I really got to check this out. There wasn't anything like that that had there wasn't a really standout track, whereas Dear Science, I know, started off with a couple of, you know, Dancing Shoes and things like that, a couple of really, you know, come out and catch you. But at the same time, you got that TV on the Radio where you got those little tiny guitar riffs going on where the guitar's like ding 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 ding,
right.
And you're just like grooving these little guitar licks while at the same time, you know, big synthesized backgrounds and drum beats and stuff. And his vocals were, it's hard to put because it's, you know, he's known for doing a lot of crazy vocals. And I felt like his vocals were maybe not as crazy, but at the same time, it still sounded like TV on the Radio. He was still doing something different that you don't hear from any other bands. So the way that I look at it is basically, if you're a fan of TV on the Radio, I think you will like this album. There's a couple of really slow parts I've noticed to it, like really slow, really, really slow parts. But I think if you like TV on the Radio, you'll like it. But if you've never heard TV on the Radio before, I don't think it's a good album to start off with.
I'm a little lukewarm on it. At the same time, I felt that this album has their best slow songs, because I tend to go back to TV and the Radio albums and I'll listen to the jams, and then the slow songs will come on and they'll suck the energy out of me and I'll just skip over them. And this album, the slow songs, I felt had a little more detail and nuance to them. And didn't really slow me down too bad. That said, there is no real standout track. There are tracks with standout moments, but no standout tracks. So Second Song and Caffeinated Consciousness, if I said that right, those songs have neat little moments in them, but as a whole, they weren't completely great.
Yeah, that definitely no standout tracks. And, you know, that's kind of telling when you do a whole video for the entire album. Yeah. You know what I mean? Usually that kind of means that there's not one track that's outstanding. You got to take the whole thing as a whole.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I can see where you're lukewarm on it. I like the album. But... Yeah, again, I like the album because I like TV on the Radio, but it's still, there's no really like high point to it like I can think of with Dear Science and again, Return to Cookie Mountain and things like that. There's no real high point to it, but it made me happy to hear different TV on the Radio in the end. That's what, it made me happy to hear it.
It's not like a terrible record, but... Like, it's weird because I'm reading reviews for it, and they're not as glowing as they were for Dear Science and Cookie Mountain. And it's funny because I feel this record is their least weird record. Like, if I played that album, if I played Nine Types of Light in the car with my dad, there'd be no issue.
You know, that's what I was saying by it's not as charming. You know what I mean? Because
it doesn't have any, like, esoteric moments that, like, someone is either going to embrace as, wow, that's a crazy awesome idea, or that's too weird for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's funny because I feel I'm making it sound like it's a boring record, and it's not, but for what TV on the radio has given us in the past, it's I guess it's their safe record.
Which I think this is not good for a band like that, because of the fact that I really think that Dear Science was really starting to put them on the map. I think this is kind of bury them, because if you weren't into TV on the radio before, there's nothing on this album that's gonna catch you. You know what I mean? Like, they play Dancing Shoes on Letterman, and then on this album, I don't think they're going to get that Letterman spot. You know what I mean? I don't think they're going
to. Not to throw you off here.
Are
but,
they?
They already played Letterman, and they actually did a full concert on Letterman.
Oh, okay.
You can go on Letterman's website, I guess, and watch like the full show.
Well, on the website or on the show?
Did they did a segment on the show,
okay.
But they also played a full concert.
Hmm. Yeah, I just don't think it's going to grab more people in to check out TV on the Radio.
It doesn't sound like this record, but I'm a little reminded, since you made that reference that, like, they were sort of blowing up with Dear Science, that the Flaming Lips were blowing up after Yoshimi, and then they put out that crappy record that no one likes. What's that record called?
They're all
crap to me.
They put
that record out, and that record, I was like thinking, like, this is your follow-up to Yoshimi, this beloved record that everyone loves. You put this record out with these boring songs and, like, two sort of rockers. That's it. And then they follow that up with a really dense, proggy record, proggy double record, and basically just let us know, we like our small audience. We didn't want to really get big. So maybe this is TV on the Radio saying, we don't want to get bigger. But at the same time, they haven't made a record that's out there and crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, they haven't even gone, well, I don't know.
I'm
getting too hit. I think I'm going up my ass on this one.
This just makes me want to go listen to Wolf Like Me. That's all I know.
There you go. That's like a jam.
So, hey, there's a new TV on the Radio. Go listen to the first album. So I would probably, overall, if I had to give it a yep or a nope, I would probably give it a nope.
I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it, but at the same time, I would be hesitant to, like, I'm not going to go, like, my buddy Shane, I showed him Dear Science, and he was like, shit, man, this is, you know, I love this shit. He, you know, got into it. I'm hesitant to go to my friends and go, dude, check this out, new TV on the Radio.
Correct.
So that's why I guess it would classify under nope.
That would be a nope. Yeah.
Unless you're finding this album on your own because you like TV on the Radio the same way that I did, I don't think you're really going to seek it out.
I have to agree with you on that. All right. And that brings us to the end, sir.
Now I got to go learn how to do some algebra, which I don't know how to do, which, I'm screwed.
All right. Good luck with your math, sir. And we shall reconvene shortly for more fun podcasting.
Take care.
Bye. I'm not mad, I'm just bored, and everything I do is only because there's nothing much else for me to do, and that includes you, and that includes